I am Platt Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Shining at the bottom of the sea is a new book from the author Stephen Marsh. It is a groundbreaking anthology of fiction, poetry, and criticism from Sanjania, an island nation in the North Atlantic. It has been described as a complicated literary joke, but in its complexity, which really lies in the fact this novel is hard to define at face value, lies a remarkable book about a fictional place. The author joins me to take us on a little tour of a stunning, imaginative, and remarkable place. The full trip in the form of the book can be had from Viking at the price of $32. His first novel, Raymond and Hannah, was shortlisted for the 2002 O. Henry Prize. Please welcome to the Platt on the Line program, Stephen Marsh. Good morning, Mr. Marsh.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us. How do you explain this book? How would you explain it, I should say?
Well, I usually describe it as a literary anthology of an invented country. I find when I try to really get simpler than that, I become misleading. I mean, for a while I thought I was doing a mockthology, you know, like a mockumentary, but a mockthology. But the truth of the matter is that it's not, the authors aren't really parodies. You know, the authors are not jokes. They're, you know, I may be kidding on the outside, but they're dead serious, and so I don't really feel that that's appropriate, although it does capture something of the spirit of it.
It's been compared from everything from Jonathan Swift to Doris Lessing to Nabokov.
I know, I love it. I mean, that's one of the things I really love is I keep track of everyone I'm compared to for this book because it got over about 30 different people, including, like, my favorite was Dr. Seuss.
Really?
And then there were all these people that I'd never read. I'm not one of those writers who's proud of not having read people, but it just so, you know, I've never read Nadine Gordimer, but, you know, I was called, like, a pitch-perfect evocation of a Nadine Gordimer story, and that's just sort of really thrilling to me that I can provide imitations of writers that I haven't read.
Now, you obviously read the reviews. Are there misconceptions that reviewers may have or readers may have about your book?
I don't know. I mean, I feel it's such an easy book to misunderstand. I feel I've been a lot of people have got it more than I kind of imagined in my cynical way. I don't think there are any, because I don't really have any. I don't think there are really any preconceptions that you bring to a novel like this, you know? I mean, it's a literary anthology of an invented country. What is it like that you've read? And I think that kind of makes it easier in that sense.
How did the book come about? Were you reading a travel guide or something? And just
Well, I actually had a very, it was rare moment for me because it was very clear what happened. I was in the Robarts Library in Toronto, and I was walking somewhere, and I picked up a book that was just laying on a table, and it was an anthology of Balochistani literature, and I'd never heard of Balochistan. As it turns out, that's probably where Osama bin Laden is hiding out right now. It's, I think it's in Iran on the border with Pakistan, and they have an amazing literary tradition, you know, I mean, these sort of gorgeous, epic 13th century poems, and so on, and all the way down to modern writing. So I sort of thought, you know, that once I read that, I knew that I would produce an anthology of an invented country.
It doesn't seem to me, from my reading of it, that you wrote it in the form that we see it, that I mean cover to cover, that you
right.
wrote it in that order.
No, I mean, I wrote it, I wrote about 150 stories, and then it is genuinely an anthology, in the sense that, you know, there's this whole world of fiction that you'll never see behind every story. And I think that was, I knew that you would have to be a sort of iceberg kind of effect. You know, you just see the top and then you can feel the sort of surging restlessness of the country beneath it. You know, you can go to Sanjania.com, which I actually found that quite revealing about how I'd written, like, when I wrote that, because that, it's kind of a separate work of art, the website, and it's got a lot of, you know, what you would want to know about Sanjania, like its political system and its history and so on, and its geography, and almost none of that appeared in the book at all. You know, the book is just short stories, so the difference between the stories and the background was really kind of stark in the book, and in the process of writing it, too.
You said you wrote 150 stories.
Yeah. I'm estimating. That's what I think.
And how many are in the book, roughly?
18.
And how do you go about picking and choosing what's in there? Do you do that, or does someone
else
do that?
Well, exactly the same as, you know, with an ordinary anthology. Like, your favorites, you know, like the stories you like best. And then also, you know, things that represent the sort of general trend of the literary, to give a sort of sense of what was going on in various periods in St. Jenian literary history. So, you know, it was basically those two conditions. And then the criticism section is just sort of, you know, explaining what's happening in the fiction, you know.
Reviewers of the book have called it an amazing achievement that you've created all of this. I used the word remarkable in the intro. Groundbreaking is another word. Do you see it that way?
Well, I don't know.
Must be a hard question to ask.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm blushing. You can't see this on radio, but I'm blushing. I mean, I guess there are two ways of looking at it. I mean, on the one hand, you know, no. Because I sort of think, like, what I'm doing is very much in the tradition of writers like Fernando Pessoa. And I found that with my first book, too, which had marginalia all down the side, where, you know, people call it, like, you know, incredibly original, and I would sort of say, well, actually, I'm imitating this 13th century Chinese form. I will say that I think the novel, as it exists now, particularly in Canada, where, you know, it's basically... You know, this is not a coming-of-age story set in a rural community, and it's not a melodrama about the sufferings of the past set in an exotic location, you know, which is overwhelmingly what we produce in Canada. You know, it is a radical break from that, but I think in the longer term, you know, I feel myself as very kind of classical. If I can put it that way without seeming ridiculous, like I sort of feel like I'm very traditional in certain ways about what I like to see in a novel. It's just that those traditions are not the traditions that I'm in living in Toronto, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And then do you find yourself creating perhaps a new genre?
Well, I guess it could be considered a new genre in the sense that it's never been done with a novel, but you know, it's never been, whether it even makes any sense to call it a novel is really something that I've never been really sure about, and what to call it, I think, is a bit of a problem. But, you know, I will say I don't think readers care at all about that. I think they are just really interested in being transported, you know, and I use that word advisedly, like literally taken somewhere else. And that is why I wrote it, so that there would be this kind of fresh world that was like the real world that readers would inhabit. And really, all the other questions about whether it's a new genre and so on, I think are really, not distractions, but maybe camouflage. You know, maybe not really the essential question of what's going on between me as a writer and the readers.
I'm talking with Stephen Marsh about his new book, Shining at the Bottom of the Sea, $32 from Viking. Sanjania.com is the website,
yeah.
Sanjania.com. You created this. Whose idea was it to create the website?
Well, I was always interested in producing a website. I mean, it was partly my publisher's idea, but once Nicole and Stephen Myers decided that they wanted... you know, it really became a real opportunity for me creatively. I loved having it because it really is totally separate from the book. I mean, you don't need anything on the website to make sense of the book, and vice versa. You know, I mean, you don't see a flag in the anthology, but there's the flag on the website, and of course the way that the hyperlinks work, where it creates, it's a whole other way of creating this virtual world. Which works very well for what I was doing with the fiction as well. I loved it. I mean, I thought it was tremendously exciting. I mean, I'm not sure anyone has really figured out how to write really interesting fiction that's web-based. But that sort of, it sort of gave me a hint of the potential that's there. in the sense that, you know, everything is horizontal there rather than narrative. You know, everything is clickable. You know, it's hyperlinked rather than you know, consecutive. And I found it very exciting. I mean, I don't know what it means, but I found it, and I don't know where it will lead, but someone will find a way to make it work.
The talk to us about this place, San Genia.
What do you want to know?
San Genia. Is this, putting yourself in the story, putting yourself as the narrator, you play an academic, I guess,
mm-hmm.
a scholar.
Yeah.
Putting yourself in that, was that to make the book perhaps more believable, or I don't know how to put it?
Well, you know, it's really, I found it very strange going around talking about San Genia, because it's much easier for me to talk about it as if it's a real place, because I've actually spent more conscious time of, you know, consciousness, so much more of my consciousness in this place than I have to lots of places that I've visited. And when I put myself in as an anthologist, that was really only to help me make sense of all this fiction that I'd been writing. I mean, writing all this fiction, and it really was sort of like these writers were characters, and then they produced stories. So I was, you know, and I still have this weird thing, even now that the book is dead, where, well, you know, I'll have a story occur to me and think, like, oh, Leonard would really be able to write that really well. I could never write it, but Leonard would be great with that, or Octavia Kitteridge-Mann would be great for that. And also having really, you know, strange things like, you know, I think there are definitely stories in this collection that are better than anything that I could write, that I, Stephen Marsh, the short story writer, who's, you know, published short stories, you know, they're just much better because they come from a different point of view than anything I can pretend to have. So having the anthologist there, me as the anthologist, was really, I guess, grasping at the straws of sanity as I was thrown into this whirlpool of new selves. And that was, you know, it really was sort of a way of creating a, I guess, the circle around the circus that was going on in the fiction, if I can put it that way. I mean, you know, in the story, I'm at the NLAS, the National Library and Archives of San Genia, and I'm creating the anthology for 2 years, but, you know, the process of actually doing that, you know, that description that I give in the book is not actually that different from what I ended up doing by writing the book and then collating it and collecting it. So yeah, I mean, it just felt right. You know, it just, there was no other way, because that was sort of what I was feeling.
You spend a lot of time there in your mind's eye.
Yeah, I mean, it is much more real to me than places like Italy, you know, where I've been, or Argentina, where I spent 2 weeks. Like, it just is. I know what it looks like. I know what they drink. I know I have lots of friends there. You know, it's sort of like the imaginary friend thing taken to the extreme of a nation. And so, just as, you know, imaginary friends behave in strange ways, so do imaginary countries. And that's been the surprise of what goes on there has been one of the most interesting things for me.
Could we say then that it's an ideal place for you? That it's what you'd like the world to be, perhaps?
No, not at all. I mean, it isn't an ideal place at all. It's just a place. I mean, it had itself a brutal dictatorship. You know, its literature is not certainly not my ideal kind of literature. You know, it's not like I think, like, the literature of San Genia is greater than the literature of, say, Trinidad. Or, I mean, it's very interesting literature to me. It combines a lot of elements that I've always admired, and it has a lot of, it has a certain kind of breadth of writing and sort of variety of writing that I find very interesting. But it, in no way is it a utopia. I mean, it only became a democracy in 93. And it's got a very chaotic democracy, they're also, you know, I mean, I like St. Genians a lot, but in no sense are they sort of all really good people or something. You know, they're not they're not sort of noble or something like that. They're just people. I mean, highly literate people, but not they're not like magnificent islanders or something like that. They're quite brutal when they want to be, and they're quite stupid sometimes, and they're quite sometimes they write poorly, sometimes they act poorly. They're just people.
The fact that it boasts a 100% literacy rate, that it is a very highly literate society, mm-hmm. that probably appeals to you as a writer.
Yes, I mean, but there are other places with that literacy rate. I mean, like Iceland has a 100% literacy rate. I don't know if it appeals to me. I think when you live in a small country, and by that I mean countries that aren't really in control of their own fate, like. I know Milan Kundera has written about this in Eastern Europe as well, and it's certainly true of Canada. Literature just starts mattering a lot more. It becomes a sort of key part of identity. And I think Sanjani, which is caught between a lot of different places, Europe and North America, the West Indies and Africa, literature matters a huge amount to it. So that attracted me, definitely. But it's not a sort of like writer's paradise or something like that. I mean, since 1959, or a little later, since the early 60s, all of the writing that is in the anthology happened in Toronto, London, New York. In the late 20th century, it's a writing of diaspora people. So, I just wouldn't say that it's sort of a utopia kind of, or like a Jonathan Swift kind of place I'm trying to make some point about literature's place in the world. Like, no, Sanjanian literature has its own conditions that it happens under, but they're certainly not ideal.
Why did you situate Sanjania in the North Atlantic?
I think that's actually... It's really hard for me to know that. I mean, it was automatic. I just knew instantly, if it's a fake place, it's got to be in the North Atlantic. There are these fake islands, legends of fable that people thought were in the North Atlantic for a long time. I mean, I think that appealed to me. But I think, to be frank, I think of myself as a kind of North Atlantic person. I don't know what that means. I don't even know if I could describe it, but I certainly know that that is the ocean that has a kind of, I feel something with that ocean that I just couldn't, I guess because I lived on the, well, I don't know, I mean, I don't know why that would be. It's not like I lived there when I was a kid. I lived in the Canadian prairies when I was a kid, but there's some profound personal link with that. I could never have written one in the South Pacific or the Pacific at all, or the Indian Ocean. I guess it's the Europe North America matrix that interests me, and the Africa North America matrix as well that interests me.
What are Sanjanians like? Talk to us about these friends of yours. These people.
I don't want to sound like as some combination of a madman and a six-year-old girl or something like that, but although that's not a bad description.
What are the things you like about them and perhaps dislike?
Well, they're not the friendliest people. They take a while to really get to know them. I mean, I got very close to several of them at the National Library and Archives at Sanjania, particularly Good Friday Forster and Mary Wellings, who helped me a lot with the, compiling various scholarly aspects of the book, particularly the author bios, and the also directed me to a lot of different fiction. I think what I find it sort of attractive about them is that they're constantly fighting between this. The way the geography of the island exists is that the coves are these very local places where you're very isolated from the world, and you're even isolated from your neighbors because the inlets are so sharp, and so they develop kind of local customs and languages and very kind of indigenous ways of doing things in these coastal outlets. And then you have Port Hope, which is the capital, which takes all of the trade from around the Cape of Good Hope and also the trade from North America into its port. And so it's a very cosmopolitan place. And so that tension between sort of extremes of cosmopolitanism and extremes of local speech and local manners and local culture, that tension is very attractive to me, because it creates, you know, creates so much surprise in their ways of doing things, and you know, there's always sort of more to know about them. Does that help?
Yeah, that gives us a good sense of the place, and I'm sure people listening to us will probably be interested to see that struggle.
Well, it plays out so clearly in the literature, you know, that struggle between local ways of speaking and sort of what's going on in the rest of the world.
How long did it take you to write this?
It took me about, you know, I mean, these things always, you know, you go away from it and come back and so on, but I think it took me about 4 years from sort of steady work.
And you said you go away from it, so do you work on other things in the interim, or?
Well, yeah. I did do a PhD while I was writing it as well, so that took some time. But it's just sort of, yeah, I mean, you work on other things, and, you know, but also with this book, it really was like, you know, I'd sort of finish writing a Leonard King story, and then it would sort of be like, oh, well, now there's a new Octavia Kitteridge Mann story for me to write, now there's a new Juliet Bock story for me to write, and so there was a lot of going back and forth, and, you know, creating, you know, I'd work for 5 months and produce stuff that all was thrown away, and that would, you know, that took a certain amount of being punched around the head and neck to survive, you know.
And is it hard for you to get away from the place? Because you obviously thought about it a lot while writing it. Now that the book's done, do you move on to other things, or do you still think about it from time to time?
I still think about it. I mean, it's very hard to describe just how real it is to me. I mean, it sort of feels like, well, I mean, I can go there any time I want, you know, the book is very, you know, it is funny, because when I do look at the book again, and I never do that, you know, I don't look at things I've written in the past, but when I'm on tour and so on like that, and reading things, and I look at it, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that guy. You know, or there'll be, and then the other thing is, of course, because of all this thrown out stuff, there's all these memories that I've forgotten, which is actually maybe how you know a place, is when you have that kind of background of things that you've actually forgotten, and those things are very there too, and so every memory sort of conjures up, you know, feelings of lost memories. It's very there, you know.
May I ask what you're working on now?
Well, I just won't tell you. I won't tell you.
Would you ever go back to Sanjania?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's sort of in exactly the state I want it right now. And, you know, it doesn't need to be made any more complicated than it is, especially with the website and so on. I mean, you know, when I give talks and so on, I just do a slideshow of the illustrations, and I just, you know, I mention things that I know, but actually I kind of forgotten and haven't been written down anywhere. So that's a kind of other interesting thing about it, where, you know, I'm sort of, as I'm talking to people, it's like I'm creating. I'm not creating because it's already existed in my own mind, but it's new to the world, I guess. But it's just, so, you know, every time I talk about it, Sanjania sort of expands a little bit, which is another strange thing. You know?
I'm curious, going on this book tour,
uh-huh,
and you're giving your talks, do people come up to you who perhaps don't know what's going on and say, where is this place? They think that it's a real place?
I have had people mention to me that they didn't know for a while that it didn't exist, which I don't find that surprising. You know, I mean, it is like, it's like a lot of countries. I mean, it's not a huge stretch to imagine it not existing. And, you know, the world is huge. Like, there are lots of countries that I don't know about, that you don't know about. you know, it could quite easily be. And for a while, one producer I was talking to yesterday said, it was on Wikipedia for a while, which I think it briefly was, and then it was quickly kicked off. But, and then she saw our Senjania website, and she was quite confused until about halfway through the book. I think it does actually happen, that people think it's real.
This is really a neat book, and people listening who have been interested by it ought to pick it up, because it is fun, and it's quite a great read, really. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us, and continued good luck with the book.
Thanks very much, Joseph.
The book is called Shining at the Bottom of the Sea by Stephen Marsh, $32 from Viking. I'm Joseph Plantum.